But hello to all of you as well, and welcome back to adfreeshows.com. This is another exclusive live event. I don't think they're doing these anywhere else. And Eric, I want to let you know that this month marks the 2-year anniversary of the very first Locked and Loaded. Can you believe we've been doing this for 2 years?
That's so crazy. It's amazing how much this platform has grown and how many things that have happened as a result of it, the StarCast events and Top Guy events. And yeah, it's just awesome. Really, really proud of everybody involved.
I am too. I'm glad to be a part of this team. Guys, this is the most fun that I can't believe I get to do this all the time and to hang out with you guys. You guys are the best part of this. So glad that so many of you have been here for 2 full years since that very first Locked and Loaded with Eric Bischoff. So with all of that being said, we're ready to kick off what I think is the 12th or 13th installment of Locked and Loaded. This is our longest running live event, believe it or not, Eric, and one of the most popular. So without further ado, I'd like to kick it off with a question from Zol. Hello, how are you, Zol?
Hey, I'm doing good, Lauren. As always, looking fabulous. Eric, as always, great to chat with you tonight. And I've got a third generation wrestling fan with me tonight. So her name is Zozo. Zozo, you want to say hi?
Hi.
Oh, that was so cute. Hi, Zozo.
So, yeah, she's going to go back to cartoons. So, Eric, you know, obviously it was announced recently, Top Guy Weekend is upon us. We finally have those dates. So, you know, in the tradition, the spirit that is Locked and Loaded, when it comes to fans perhaps coming up for autographs, maybe approaching you out in public, perhaps it's Top Guy Weekend, maybe it's a convention. Do you have any stories that you can share where you're just like, oh no,
yeah,
never again?
That's going to be the first time he met me.
and I guess kind of a follow-up to that, if not, what would be some rules, etiquette, procedures that you would recommend for people that are perhaps coming to Top Guy Weekend that are going to be meeting some of their childhood heroes, icons, if you will, having that personal experience? What would be some rules or etiquette that you would provide?
I mean, for me, as long as somebody's had a shower within 2 or 3 days, I'm good to go. You know, you know, everybody's different, but I think it's safe to say, you know, all of us who are involved, you know, on this platform, and I'm speaking for Jim Ross and Tony, Bruce, Jeff, Kurt, you know, we're all different, but I think one thing that we all have in common is we're really grateful to our fans. So for me, I'll just talk about myself, man. I've got no boundaries. I really appreciate people coming up and introducing themselves and sharing a story or whatever, or introducing me to their kids. That's what makes the professional wrestling industry such a cool industry, is that it's so generational. So when I have someone like yourself that come up and say, hey, you know, my kid wants a picture, or can we get an autograph, or can you say, man, that's a compliment. So yeah, just make sure you had a shower within 2 or 3 days, and we're good to go.
So
and
what you're
saying, and as for my, you know, most uncomfortable moment, I'm going to refer back to why I kind of have a 3-day shower recommendation at a minimum, is there have been times that I've been to events and people want to take pictures and they want to hug, and yeah, and I'm cool with that. I'm a very hugging guy. I like to hug. But there's been moments I've gone, whoa, dude, please, brother or sister. So yeah, that's my only thing.
All right, Evan, Conrad, Dave, if you're listening, there's an opportunity for deodorant sponsorship at Top Guy Weekend 2022 is what Eric's saying. Thank you so much for the time, sir.
You bet. Thank you, man.
Oh my gosh. And if you guys know this team, you know they will be all over that suggestion, securing that sponsorship soon. Thank you so much for that, Zol. I will say that Eric did not respond super kindly when I showed up inside his hotel room unannounced, but that's a different
story. What?
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Don't start that rumor.
That didn't happen. That never happened. All right. Up next, this guy has been with us since the very first one. In fact, he's the one who brought it to my attention. It's Coach Rosie. You've been hanging around for a while, Coach. What you got for Eric tonight?
Yeah, it's a memorable night. 2 years ago, you were the very first Zoom, Eric, and
you popped your Zoom cherry. That's awesome.
Right. Yeah, you popped everybody's cherry, and you gave the rocket ship to Lauren. I mean, look where she's at now after 2 years, and all started with Locked and Loaded One. So it's a family affair here. So congratulations on that. Good to see you, Eric.
Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, I've been getting this question a lot from a lot of my students. And since you're well-versed in business, they're asking me now if a college degree is worth the investment and going into debt, possibly. They don't know, and I don't really know the right answer to give them. I don't want to steer them wrong. We came from the generation of college, college, college. But, you know, what do you think about that now in 2022?
I didn't think much of it in 1973, to be honest with you, when I graduated from high school. but I was different. You know, and again, not to try to dance around the question, but there's no one size fits all answer. If I had a son or daughter who was really interested in engineering or law or medicine or something that absolutely requires specific, much higher education, I would do everything in my power to try to make that opportunity available. But if I had a son or a daughter who was like, well, I think I want to go to college because, well, I'm supposed to go to college and I'm not sure what I really want to do. So I'm going to go in there with, we used to call it, you know, liberal arts major, you know, basically not declaring thing, kind of hang out and find myself. I would not be supportive of that. You're not going to find yourself if you don't have a good idea of why you're going to college in the first place. You're going to spend a shit ton of money. You're going to have a great time. You're going to do any number of things that you're hoping nobody was filming. But it's not necessarily a great financial investment if you don't have a plan. I think that's such a natural thing for parents of even, you know, my generation, especially, you know, you got to go to college, you got to go to college because that's what we were taught.
Right.
But statistically, that's not true. If you look at the number of millionaires in this country and you toss out the ones that inherited it and you look at the ones who have, you know, are legitimate millionaires, a lot of them didn't do it because they went to college. So individual answer to a very individual question. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. And just so you're made aware, on TNT this week, they're doing a documentary on Girls Gone Wild.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So I know that you might have been at a couple of those parties. So you never know. We might catch you on TNT again.
No, you won't. That's one thing I was really careful about.
Smart.
I knew that shit was going to come back to haunt somebody eventually. And that was before, you know, cell phones and everything. But, you know, Joe Francis was the guy who ran the Girls Gone Wild, and I knew him fairly well. He's an animal. He would just, you know, cameras to him are like, you know, everybody should have one. You guys should all be shooting all the time. So, yeah, I went to a couple events. You know, the Girls Gone Wild WWE event that I helped co-produce. I think there may have been a couple other ones that we showed up to shoot footage to help promote the pay-per-view. And I didn't hang around long. It, you know, girls were all like 20, 21, 22, 23 years old. It's like, man, this is fucking creepy. I'm out of here. So I showed up to do what I had to do and got the hell out. So no, I'm not worried about that. They can document the hell out of that thing for all I care. I got nothing to hide.
You got any skeletons in your closet, Yaffe, from back in the day? Yeah.
Back in the day. That one. Back in the day, I was like 12, so no. You guys forget I'm a lot younger than all of you, except, you know, Sorensen, because he reminds us every day. Speaking of which, thank you so much, Josh Rosenbaum. I appreciated that question as well. We love picking the business mind of Eric Bischoff. Speaking of Sorensen, let's say hey to James. Hey, James Sorensen.
Howdy. It's been two hard to believe it's been 2 years.
And yeah, I can't believe that you have been around for 2 years, considering you were like 14 when this started. So, welcome back.
14, 24, same. I'm 24 now, give or take. So,
what you got for Eric?
Eric, have you tried out that new Jameson yet?
No, I haven't. I appreciate you sending me a picture of that. I definitely will try it somewhere down the road, but I'm I haven't dipped into any Jameson now in a couple months.
All right. Well, Top Guy weekend. Hopefully, allow me to buy you a drink. I'm driving in that Thursday, so hopefully, sometime that weekend, I can buy you a drink. But my question is,
what do you think the odds of that are happening? Given the last couple events we went to, I think the odds are pretty good because I generally like to go down to the bar and hang out with everybody for as long as I can without making an ass of myself. So yeah, that'll probably happen, bro. Don't worry about that.
I'm not worried, especially because, I mean, if not, I'll just drive up to Cody, Wyoming. Sorry, Lauren. but my main question was, is Jeff Jarrett a four horseman?
In Jeff Jarrett's mind, of course. You know, he self-identifies as a horseman.
I self-identify as Mrs. Eric Bischoff. So
well, somebody's going to try that somewhere down the road. We'll see how that works.
You know, I have the utmost admiration for you, my friend, and appreciate your friendship.
Thank you, buddy. Same here.
Yours is important too. Yours is important too.
Oh, good to see you, James. Thanks for joining us this evening. Let's say hello as well to our friend Denobius. This is another OG. He's been around for a while. Hey, Denobius.
Big D. Where is he?
I don't know. Did he bail on us? You know, he used to have really terrible, signal every time he called into one of these. You never know what you're going to get with Denobius. D Money, we can come back to you in a little bit. Maybe he's preoccupied. Anthony Pyrus, always a pleasure to see you. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, how are you, Eric? Thank you for taking my question tonight. I wanted to. What's that, honey? I'm talking to Eric Bischoff. No, it's not about the T-shirt. That ship sailed. Yeah, I love you too. Goodbye. Anyway, Eric, I want to ask you a business question. You had said when you took over WCW, one of the guys, I think it was either Bob Dew or Bill Shaw, wanted to keep going out to house shows to make money. But obviously you were losing about, I think you said about $10,000, $15,000 every time you left the house. How exactly was his plan? What exactly was his plan to make money? Was it the old territory thing where he wanted to go to the same place every month to establish residency or loyalty? What was going to make money going out more versus, you know, what you were thinking, stopping house shows altogether?
First of all, it was Bob Dew, not Bill Shaw. And Bob's job before he became involved in WCW was he managed arenas around the country. He had a live events background. That's where all of his relationships were. So he thought very much like a live events person in some respects. I can't tell you where his logic was because there was no logic in it. And I think, you know, and this happens corporately a lot where somebody who oversees a division or a department and they've been challenged to figure out a way to increase revenues in that particular business unit, well, they find all kinds of ways to get that top line number up, and they present that top line number because oftentimes when companies are making budget decisions, that begins the process, and then they start getting into the costs of those top line numbers and things get changed and all that. But I think with Bob, you know, rather than trying to really figure out a way to make the live event side of the business actually profitable, he was only focused on growing that top line number and hoping that he could sell that and worry about how to make money doing it later. Well, that's what WCW had been doing, and it wasn't working. And that's what it's really what led to me becoming president of the company, because I, you know, Bob Dew was effectively, he was my boss. You know, Bill Shaw was a president of WCW. Bob Dew was the executive vice president. I was the vice president. So although I reported directly to Bill Shaw, technically Bob Dew was my boss as well. I had what they call a dotted line relationship with him in the flow chart. And at a very crucial point in time when we were trying to figure out budgets and how to turn things around, Bob and I had a very vigorous debate. And I was pretty fucking vigorous back in the day. Wasn't as polished as I am now, not that I'm polished, but I was less polished then, more direct, if you can imagine that. And it led to Bob being let go.
So was it his thought maybe to like promote harder, promote better?
I don't know, man. I can't tell you. He didn't, there was no logic in it. He didn't try to present a irrational solution as to how he was going to make live events profitable. He just knew he wanted to make live events bigger. Two different things.
Eric, I appreciate you wholeheartedly. Lauren, thank you for hosting this. And of course, go Pats!
Ah! I've been listening to this for 2 years.
I want whatever he had.
Captain's daughter beer from Graysale, baby. Woo!
Good for you. You're a cheap date and you're fun.
Anthony, I don't know if you caught your appearance in the Top Guy Weekend promo video, but I enjoyed it. It was good to see a lot of you guys in that video, actually. And while we're talking,
you want to make money and grow Top Guys, right? So you put Anthony on.
That's
and immediately women do the men want to
discussed. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. So while we're talking about Top Guy Weekend, obviously, Eric, this announcement came down this week that Top Guy Weekend is officially scheduled. It'll be in Chicago, Labor Day weekend, butting up against an AEW event. So it's going to be a good time. It's going to be very different from what we had last year. Wink, wink. Eric and I got to sit in on a little briefing on that yesterday. So Eric, amazing. Without giving us,
yeah, it's yes, going to be, you know, any spoilers. I'm no spoilers here. Conrad had kicked my ass, so I'm gonna be very careful. But I'm not saying it's just to hype it. I'm not saying it for any other reason. It's because it's absolutely true. This is going to be a really special event, and it's going to be a great event while it's being special. That's all I'm going to say.
It is. I am so excited, and I will let you guys in on this as well. These meetings, I don't get to attend them very often anymore, but they're usually like 20 minutes or less. And we're kind of lucky if we can keep Eric for the full 20. This one went over an hour and Eric was like gripping, like, what next? It was great. It was awesome. So we are so excited. Top Guy Weekend is going to be a blast. Tell everyone you know, because the cutoff to be a part of it has not yet passed. So technically, people who are not yet Top Guys can still get that upgrade on and be in Chicago with us. It's going to be a good time. Up next, let's get back to Denovius. Hey, Denovius. Is he going to stand me up again?
I'm here. Sorry.
There he is.
Hey, how you doing? First and foremost, Lauren, whatever you're doing, I mean, just cut it out because you're looking way too skinny these days.
No, stop. You just saw me chugging Pepsi over here.
So I just had to throw that out there. Also, hey, Eric, I got a quick, it's a complex, but I'm going to make it a short question. Now, we know that Cody Rhodes is back in the WWE. And I mean, reading on the dirt sheets, the plan is like, I don't know what exactly is in his contract, and I don't think any of us do, but do you feel that he is big enough to be the face of that company, or even if he needs that strap? Because the reason I'm saying this is because me and John Hicks were sitting next to each other at WrestleMania here in Dallas, and we both said, he brought up a good point. He said, I'm looking at Seth Rollins and Cody standing in front of each other, and I'm looking at an indie guy versus a WWE guy size-wise. Now, Cody did pick up some weight since last time he was in WWE, but I don't think it's really enough, because if you look at Chris Jericho when he left WCW and went to WWE, he looked like a heavyweight. Same thing with Rey Mysterio compared to when he first started. Cody, on the hand, I don't really see it that much. And I mean, some of it could be, I'm not going to spark up rumors, but maybe the quote-unquote steroids or whatever, but I just don't know if I can really see him as being like face like that. He's more like a Ric Flair now because he has swag. You know, he dresses nice, he talks nice, but I don't really see like them putting that rocket strip to him and letting him go. He's not bigger than Drew McIntyre. You put them two together like a little midget. Same with Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. So I'm just gonna wonder, how do you see them booking Cody Rhodes?
I mean, I first of all, I don't know. I have no idea. I wouldn't want to try to speculate, but I understand your point. You know, if you look at WWE just historically, the face of the company, as you point out, you know, the person that they're going to go with long-term, not a transitional champion, not somebody that gets that championship and holds on to it for 2, 3, 4 months. I'm talking about somebody like a John Cena, you know, level, a Rock, you know, people at that level. Look at Roman. You know, if you look at the people that have held on to that WWE title in that position for any extended periods of time, they kind of all fit one archetype, right? They're big, they're larger than life characters, they're, you know, attractive people, they're mediagenic, they've learned how to do great promos, they've learned how to be out in public and represent the company in a very, very positive way. Cody has many of those characteristics. Cody can cut great promos, some of the best I've seen in a long time recently. He's got an amazing look. He's being put on a huge pedestal right now. I would say, yeah, it's a rocket ship. It's not the rocket ship, but it is a rocket ship in an arsenal of rocket ships. Will he ever be the face of the company? I don't know, because time will tell, man. Things are changing so fast. And it may be that in a relatively short period of time, you know, within the lifespan of Cody's existing contract, that the bigger, larger than life characters are de-emphasized a little bit. And if that happens, then sure, either Seth or Cody could probably qualify for that position. I think right now they're building Cody for something. He just showed up. I know how long his contract is, and I'm not going to repeat it, but it's not a short-term deal. It's not going to be a flash in the pan. There's a big investment there, not only from a financial perspective, and I don't know what that number is either. If I did, I wouldn't tell you. But the amount of time, the equity, the investment that they've been putting into Cody since he showed up at WrestleMania doesn't indicate to me that this is going to be, oh, let's just see what happens until he flames out. There's a plan for Cody. I don't know what it is. And I think I'm open-minded to know that the era of the big man has been becoming more and more difficult to fulfill as time goes on. So we'll see. Does Cody have the talent? Absolutely. Does he have the size? Probably not today, but by tomorrow, that prerequisite of being larger than life may change.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for opening that up for me. So now I got a different perspective to look at that on.
Yeah, stay open-minded, man. Stay open-minded, yeah, because part of that, Denovius, and I know you pretty well, brother. You're a positive person. You're such a positive person. And I appreciate a lot of the uplifting things that you said to me from time to time, as others do here. But, you know, if I look at something like they go, oh, well, yeah, they're giving him a push now, but he's never really going to get the push. I'm already taking some of the joy out of this stuff for myself. I'm looking at it from kind of a I don't want to say a negative angle, but not a positive one either. And that's why I look at this stuff and it's like, man, just keep an open mind. Don't start predicting or judging or analyzing things that there's no way any of us could judge or analyze, because it's all about the future. And so much has changed just in the last 18 months. So many things have changed. So I'm optimistic. I'll keep an open mind, and we'll see what happens.
And I appreciate that. And I definitely will say thank you for the reminder, Eric. You have a good one. And say hello to the grandbaby for me.
I'll do that, brother. You be well. Be safe.
Thank you, Lauren. You guys have a good one.
Thanks, Denovius. All right, we've talked to a couple of our OGs, Eric. I want to hang out with some of our newer friends. Lone Wolf Montgomery is joining us. How are you this evening?
Hello, Ms. Lauren. How you doing, sister?
Doing better now. Good to see you. What you got for Eric?
Oh, you too, my friend. Eric, this is a blessing, man. You don't know what you mean to me in my childhood, in my life. It's like I get on these things not really with questions because he asks a lot of wrestling questions, but we come from some of the same backgrounds. You was my childhood. I thank you for everything. My dad said hello, even though he has an issue with you, even though I said it's entertainment and he can't get off that fact because my dad still thinks wrestling is real for some strange reason.
Well, God bless him. Brothers, God bless him and everybody like him.
Oh my God, my brother said he told me to tell you new world order. Because me and him was with some of the he's the hugest Hogan fan. I still remember him at the age of four crying when Warrior beat Hogan. Our wrestling history goes way back. We follow our stuff in Oregon. So I'm just at odd. I'm talking right now. It's just I'm geeking out right now.
You're making my night. You're having so much fun. You're making me have fun, and that's why this whole thing is a good time. So I much appreciate it.
I work at Nike, so I deal with superstars all the time. Basketball stars, Anthony Davis, Odell Beckham, you name it. We deal with them all the time. So, but you know, to actually get to talk to somebody from my childhood that I admire and I grew up with, it was just amazing. I'm from Minnesota, so I'm from Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota. If you know where that's
what part of Minnesota?
Inver Grove Heights.
Oh, okay. I know that area.
So when we moved to Hudson, we actually finally got cable. So me and my brother would tape Nitro and watch it again on Tuesday. And everything you did with the NWO spot, man, except for the diluted, it kind of got diluted when you kept sticking everybody in there. I'm like, man, if you had like four or five main guys in there, y'all could have rolled with that for like a few years. I just want to thank you for everything. I kind of like always write things down that I want to say, and I can't believe I forget about it because when I get on here, you kind of make me nervous, like geeking out because I'm seeing you. But my question is, I don't even have a question. I'm just honest with
you. You don't need a question, brother. You can just stop by and say hi. It's okay.
This is crazy. No, just everything you did, man, from the sold outs to the my favorite WCW match of all time is the Rey Mysterio and Greddy Guerrero. I go and watch that match all the time. Matter of fact, I became the October of 96 is when I became a diehard Rey Mysterio fan. I'm still an NWO fan, Harlem Heat fan, whatnot. But that's why I got attracted to him because it was my first time seeing him. And then when you and Conrad talk about it, and again, shout out to Conrad. I love you for what you've done. I work at Amazon, so I'm out on the road all the time. You guys are always in my ear every day. I'm always catching old episodes I haven't heard. But he made me love the Luchadors because I was a gymnast. So I flip all the time and do all that stuff. So when I saw that match between him and Eddie Guerrero, still to this day, I watch that match a couple of times a year because the way they performed that match, mixing it with the Luchador with the technical wrestling. I've always been a big technical wrestling fan. Bret Hart's one of my favorite wrestlers. Kurt Hennig is my favorite wrestler. That was my first heel wrestler of all time. Him and Iron Anderson was my first two favorite heels of all time growing up as a kid. Seeing that match and the way y'all perfected it, and then hear you, Conrad, talk about it, and how you did. It was different. It was WWE gave you the funny, the laugh. You gave the serious. I took you guys more seriously because when you guys would tell a story, it didn't have, you never seen ha-ha funny in matches. You never gave us anything to laugh for. They gave it to us in WWF, but y'all didn't give there. And with that and the realism and the game-like mentality the NWO always gave, it just always kept us tuned in. So me and my brother was on it every day Tuesday. We'd get home, watch the tape, and we'd just be at odd because we'd catch some of it, but then we'll catch all of it the next following day. So to me, no questions. Just want to thank you, my friend, of everything you've done for my childhood. Man, you was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend. And tell your dad to get it straight. Tell him to jump on here next time. We'll work it out.
I would love to.
We'll work it out.
Yeah, see, he said, he would say goofy things like, oh, well, why can't these two guys get in there? This guy versus that guy. Like, I said, Dad, that's the UFC. That's boxing. He won't watch amateur wrestling. And I'm a huge fan of amateur wrestling. I did amateur wrestling in high school. But I would like to catch amateur wrestling on ESPN. Sometime. I'll watch it. But he can't stand that stuff. But he was seriously, he hates the UFC, talks bad about it all the time. he hates, he don't like amateur wrestling because he says it's too boring. So he feels that this is real, but it's not. And, you know, that was a story. Well, I said, yes, it was.
All right. I'll tell you right now. Listen, we got to get to a couple more people. But next time I do this, you have your dad come on. We'll make that happen.
I see what I can do, man. Thank you again, Eric.
All right.
Have a good night, my brother.
See you later, bud.
All right. Thank you, Lone Wolf Montgomery. And hey, it's a fun idea to bring dads to Top Guy Weekend. Just ask James El Karai. His dad was the life of the party last year. So hopefully we'll be seeing him again. And it's always good to see you, Michael McClanahan. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Lauren. Good evening, Eric. Thank you both so much for your time. I know Lauren said we're on a bit of a time crunch, so I will keep my question quick. Eric, what do you think, and this is kind of a general question, but you can take it in whatever direction you want. What are some of the biggest misconceptions you believe are out in today's modern wrestling space, whether they're put out into the space by a journalist or others in the industry? What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that fans should be aware of and maybe be a little bit more cautious of when we're looking for information online?
Well, I first of all, I'd be very careful about any information offline, online, wrestling or otherwise. It's just, you know, social media, the dirt sheet or internet wrestling community, we'll call it that to be kind. They thrive on rumor and innuendo and conjecture and a lot of narrative about subjects that very few people have any real understanding about. So just about anything you read online is going to be pretty distorted. So I would be very careful. Again, whether it's wrestling or anything else. That said, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't say that there's any one or two or three things that are the most prevalent or obvious to me in terms of misconceptions. I think probably, you know, some of the backstage chatter that you hear about. I see a lot of writers, you know, that post online stuff on legitimate sites, by the way, sites that I follow in some cases. But the one pet peeve I have is when they have in the title backstage news. Well, first of all, Mucker Father, you're not backstage. You know what I mean? So don't suggest, mislead consciously or subconsciously, subliminally or otherwise. Don't mislead your readers into thinking that you're actually backstage conducting real interviews with the principals involved, because you're fucking not. So whenever I hear somebody, you know, it's like the old saying when everybody says, opens up a statement by saying, let me be honest with you. First time somebody says, let me be honest with you, to me, I'm wondering how they're setting me up. I'm looking for the other shoe to drop. And when you call something backstage news, to me, that's a red flag that you're not reporting anything news. Now, there's a couple people that do get consistently good information, or a few people that will really go the extra mile to get at least one other source on record or two before they break a story. And I really respect those guys because it's hard to get confirmation or support in wrestling stories. Wrestling companies are typically, they only tell you what they want you to know or what they want you to print, not necessarily what you're really asking. So it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of trust to build the kind of relationships where you're getting information that you can reasonably expect to be mostly true, as opposed to a guy like Dave Meltzer, who will just take information from anybody and repeat it as fact and not waste 2 minutes trying to fact check it or get another source for it. Just doesn't bother. And that kind of narrative is almost always misleading because it's an agenda driven approach. You know, it's not accurate at all. So I would just stay away from all of it and sit back and enjoy it. You know, listen to a show like Strictly Business because there's no agenda there. You know, I have no dog in any hunt. I'm not trying to fulfill anybody's agenda. And in most cases, I'm giving you a perspective, mine, which was, you know, haven't been in the business of the wrestling business in a number of years. So arguably it's outdated in some respects, but there's a lot of things that are still true today in terms of how the television industry actually works and how much ratings matter or why they matter, more importantly, how and why they matter. Because it's not as simple of a formula as a lot of people that write and talk about it would have you believe. Man, I've gone on a long time with that answer. Jesus, I hope it answered it for you.
Absolutely. And just as aside, before I say my farewells, thank you so much for introducing Strictly Business as a CPA. I absolutely love that. And it's my favorite podcast and an excellent deep dive. And again, Eric, Lauren, thank you so much for your time this evening and for answering my question.
Thank you, buddy. And thanks for being a part of all this. Appreciate it very much.
Yes. Thank you so much, Michael. I too am loving Strictly Business. Be sure to check it out if you haven't already. That is an ad-free show's exclusive. So tell all your friends if they want to hear that one, they're going to have to sign up. And don't forget, if you sign up as a top guy, you get to come to Chicago with us. It's going to be a good time. Adrian Gomez, it's good to see you this evening. What do you have for Eric Bischoff? Don't forget.
Yo, Adrian.
Imagine getting your chance to talk to Eric Bischoff and then you don't unmute or like can't or...
Sorry about that. That is that would be really unfortunate if that happened.
It would. Welcome. Hello, Adrian.
Hey. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having me on. Eric Bischoff, just like the gentleman before who said that you you're a big part of his childhood, definitely a huge part of mine. And to the point where I've always wanted to kind of be like you, and now I am like you as far as my career. I'm in the wrestling business now, and I've been working as a promoter, producer in China for the last since 2015.
Oh wow! Working good with for the you.
Yeah, thanks. I have a question about how WCW programming when you were president. What kind of difficulties would you encounter regarding balancing requirements and desires of international partners when you're producing show that's inherently for American audiences? Can you think of a time where you have to balance certain requirements based on a certain region? So that show could air there as well, I'd love to hear your perspective on this.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and that's actually would probably be a good topic for the Strictly Business show, because it's a great question, but it's a complicated one. But I'll summarize it here as best I can as a teaser for an upcoming episode of Strictly Business.
Thank you.
When we were producing WCW, we were obviously producing a show for a domestic U.S. audience for our parent company, Turner Broadcasting, and their respective networks, TNT and TBS. That was our core business. And we had to, first and foremost, satisfy that audience. And as a part of business, particularly professional wrestling, you also want to take advantage of international licensing opportunities so you can get your product out into different territories around the world, not only for the licensing fees that it brings in, because it does, you make a lot of money distributing your content in international markets. But the challenge became when each one of those individual markets, I'm going to use Germany as an example, because they were one of the toughest ones that we had to deal with at that time. Germany had very, very, very strict content rules and limitations. And ironically, back up a second, the first time I ever went overseas, I was a senior in high school and I was part of a foreign exchange student program of sorts. And I went and lived with a family in the Bavarian mountains in southern Germany. And the family didn't speak English. That was the whole idea, because I had to get immersed in their culture. And I lived with them for a period of time. And one evening we were sitting down with our first evenings. I sat down and had dinner with them like they always did. And the television was on. It's about 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the evening. And a commercial came on, and it was a beautifully shot commercial with a beautiful woman in the shower, perfectly naked, washing every inch of her body. And there was no attempt to even hide or anything. You know, censor in any way. She was as if you were standing there watching her shower naked. And as a, you know, at that point, 17-year-old kid, first and foremost, I was really happy to see it. As you can imagine, I was 17, crying out loud. It was cool. But I come to know, or come to learn, I should say, much, much later on in life, when I'm doing business with Germany, full frontal nudity in prime time is no big deal. Not even to 17-year-old kids in Germany, because they grew up seeing it. It's just part of life to them. It's not the same thing. Whereas here in the United States, at least up until about the last 15 years, 20 years, you know, full frontal nudity was like, oh, you know, you'd get your network thrown off the air for that. It would cause riots in the streets. People would complain. It would be horrible. FCC would get involved. The exact opposite in Germany. But here in the United States, you could beat the piss out of each other with a metal chair till your head splits open, and that's okay. But in Germany, that kind of violence, that kind of display of professional, that presentation, that hardcore presentation, they would edit it out. So we'd shoot a show that our audience here in the United States was perfectly suited for. We'd send it to Germany, for example, and they would edit the piss out of it. Sometimes they'd have to edit so much out of it that the show, there was no continuity in the show. It was just like a 38-minute video of guys beating the hell out of each other. And they had to lay their own announce tracks over it. They didn't know what the storylines were. So it was just a mess to try to manage. And every market was, you know, the UK was different than Germany. France was different than the UK. Italy was much different than all of them. And you had to understand those markets to try to come up with kind of a one-size-fits-all attempt, at least. Another long-winded answer. You guys know why I had to come up with another show, because I couldn't answer a simple fucking question, you know, on a show like this without taking 20 minutes in the process. Sorry.
Well, I appreciate that answer very much, because that kind of complication, that kind of those kind of problems I encounter a lot, because I don't only produce shows in China. I also have to, we also produce shows in the region. So like in Southeast Asia, and also in like Nepal. So I've always had to find a way to balance our core Chinese audience and also what they want in those particular countries.
Yeah, because not only do you have laws that are different, but in your case, in your part of the world, you have cultures that are completely different. You know, and just because it's Asian doesn't necessarily mean that people in Kuala Lumpur are going to like the same things that people in mainland China are going to like, and vice versa.
And we actually had an event in sponsorship with the United States State Department, and we had to produce an event in China that would please the United States State Department while also being fit for Chinese audience. So that was a major difficulty earlier this year, but I think we pulled it off.
You pulled it off. Congratulations. But look what happened to your hair in the process.
It fell out. I won't beat around the bush.
All right. Thank you, man. I appreciate the question. That was an excellent question. Good luck to you.
All right. We'd love to hear about that some more on Strictly Business. All right, Eric, I'm going to challenge you.
All right.
We have just a few minutes left and a handful of friends. So if you go longer than 60 seconds, I'm going to mute you.
There you go.
I would never. All right, guys. Up next, it's Justin Davis. Hey, JD.
Hey, Lauren. Thank you. Mr. Bischoff, thanks for doing this again. I'm digging the new haircut.
Thank you. Are you talking about yours or mine?
No, yours.
Because you're looking pretty spiffy yourself there, young man.
I'm going to have to intervene on this. I know you two are not flirting. I'm right here, Eric. What more do you need? Okay. Sorry. Go ahead,
JD. Eric, I know you're a dog person. I want to introduce you to the newest member of the family here.
Oh, that's awesome. What's the dog's name?
Ellie.
What's going on, Ellie?
I just have one quick question. I know we're squeezed on time. You know, the airplane from hell, or the plane ride from hell, or whatever, in WWE, where people notoriously got fired. Did you ever have any such situations in WCW where you kind of had to rip a little ass to the locker room or whatever?
I'm sure there was, but nothing that stands out in my mind. No. Maybe I should have a couple times, but I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you had the Arn and Sid thing or whatever, but that
yeah, but I wasn't there. Obviously I had to react to that. And we did react to that. Sid lost his job over it, but I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I didn't participate in anything like that. Nothing happened like that in front of me that I had to react to. But then, you know, a lot of times guys would do things that happened outside of the arena or venue that would filter back to us one way, shape, or form. And yeah, some of you just kind of go, eh, they're independent contractors. We don't rule their lives, kind of. Eh. But, you know, if it got too much attention outside of the company, then sometimes you'd have to react to it.
Gotcha. Tell Nikki I said hi. I saw her just slinked in there behind you. So.
Yeah, she knows it's dinner time. So she's coming over here to put pressure on me.
Aww.
All right. Thank you, Eric. And I'll see you in Chicago.
All right, buddy. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Well, gee, it's a date, I guess. All right. Matthew Presley, you're invited to chat with Eric Bischoff. Good to see you, Matthew.
Hello, Lauren. How are you?
Fantastic. What you got for Eric?
Eric, how are you?
I'm well, my friend. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I know we're running short on time. I had something really I was going to tell you that I've been waiting a long time to tell you guys, but since we're short on time, it takes a few minutes. I'll just skip to the question and save it for another time.
Tell us anyway, Matthew. I'm
going to get a little personal with you, Eric. Look, I want you guys to know what it is that you guys did for me last year. You know, me and the kids, we lost a lot. We lost their mother. She went through some stuff and we lost literally everything. We were in a shelter and it was just me and the boys and the daughter. And I was having a real hard time, but in the mornings, just so you know, in the mornings, you guys helped me a lot to, one, calm down. I listened to the podcast, you know, find my thoughts, be able to focus on what I need to do to fix mine and my kids' situation. So listening to your guys' podcast every morning really helped me out. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. You guys got me through a lot. So I want you to know that. So
thank you very much. This is why I love this place. It's why I love doing this, you know. And thank you.
Actually, one of them is right here. Mason, say hi to Eric. And this is one of my boys right here. This is the Roman Reigns fans. Make it fast, here. So this is Mason.
Hey, Mason, what's going on, buddy?
Hi.
So I wanted to let you guys. I've been trying to get that over to Conrad because we went through a lot and. You guys helped me out tremendously, really focused to get my family back to how now we are. We got, you know, back in the house and everything like that. But all that aside, now that I've done, blew your head up and let you know how much you saved my, turned my life around and helped me get it straight. In the wrestling business, if you could take one thing, just one choice that you did, and if you could take it back and do it different, what would that be? What would you do different? And it can't be thinking more creative ways to fire Honky Tonk Man.
Well, then I got nothing. it's a hard one. I can't answer that one, man. There's no such thing as one thing. There's a lot of things that with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, I would do differently. Just like we all would. I would have done things differently this morning. Had I known this morning what I know today. So I can't answer that, to be honest with you. I think in general, I wished I would have learned to be more patient at an earlier time in my life. I was pretty impatient. And I was impatient with myself too, by the way, not just with other people. In some ways it worked out because I was aggressive and there's times when being aggressive works. And I got lucky. It worked for me quite a few times. But with the benefit of 2020 hindsight and a couple of decades of experience under my belt, I think I would have been more effective had I been a little more patient with myself and with others. I think I would have been a little more successful had I not been quite as combative by nature as I am or was in that role. But you know what? That's all 2020 hindsight bullshit. If somehow I was transplanted back in that moment under the same conditions and the same circumstances with the same people, I'd like to think that I'd be more patient and maybe sometimes less combative, but I probably wouldn't have been because the conditions in some respects warranted it. WCW went through a dramatic transformation between 1994 and 1997. 36 months. That was an entirely new company. And you can't do what I did with WCW without breaking some shit in the process. Right. it's just the way it went, you know? Right. And I don't regret any of it.
Fair enough. Well, that being said, that's it. And keep up the awesome work, man. Just I want to let you know that you never know, someone like me, you could be on the other end listening, and you really do. It really does help people. So just let you know that.
Brother, you just made my night. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Matthew, we are going to make sure that Conrad sees your message. I've taken a timestamp.
Yes. I've tried to get that to him forever. I wanted to tell him for that for so long.
Don't you worry. I'm going to shoot him a text right after this, and I'm going to let Evan Polisher know to grab the audio and send that message right along. But we're glad to have you here. And we are also glad to have a wrestling historian. He's part of the team. If you're not following him on Instagram, I highly recommend
it. Oh, I do.
I know you are. Good evening, a wrestling historian. What you got for Eric?
Hi, Lauren. How's it going?
Fantastic.
Great. Mr. Bischoff, how you doing, sir?
Outstanding.
Great. I got another tough question for you.
Uh-oh.
So many years ago for a episode of WWE Confidential, they were having you go over the WCW champions. And when they asked you about Diamond Dallas Page, you said, quote, "That's a tough one because we were such good friends and because I wanted it for him and I wanted it to work for him," end quote. Could you please elaborate on that?
Well, it was tough. Again, that's just one part of the conversation. So I think I know what the context of that overall conversation was. But what was tough about it with Paige is because we were friends. We were very close friends, still are to this day. And I did want it for him. But the reality was that everybody knew that Paige and I were friends. And for me to give Paige that opportunity and to push him or set him up for success in that role, you know, as a potential champion, or in his case, a champion, meant that it was going to create a lot of resentment and somewhat polarizing attitudes backstage. So while he deserved it and I wanted it for him, the fact that he was my friend actually made it harder on him. So that's what I think the context of that conversation was about. And that's what I think I was talking about.
Is that part of the reason why you didn't give him a long run with the title?
No, that wasn't it at all, because he more than proved that he could have and should have been in that role. That I think the length of time probably had to do more with the overall booking style that was going on back then. Not too many people held on to it for too long back then. And I think it was more a function of just a creative direction or philosophy in terms of holding the belt than it was his particular performance or his success level. I mean.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Thanks for everything you do. Glad you're part of the program here.
Yes, we are. We are also glad to have Ham Radio Bobby. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Fantastic. What you got for Eric?
Excellent. Eric, you mentioned the growth between 94 and 97 in WCW. Since your budgets were basically approved well in advance, how did it work when you acquired new talent such as Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Randy Savage, etc.?
Well, it was simple. You know, we in when Nitro came along in 95, I knew that I had to have an increased budget for talent for 96. So I increased my, I asked for more money in late 1995 when we submitted our budgets for 1996. I knew that I needed more talent, had a pretty good idea what it was going to cost me. I requested additional budget. That additional budget was approved before the first of the year. And it's kind of like, okay, here's my checking account for talent. And as long as I stay within that balance, I can go do whatever I want to do. And that's basically what I did.
Makes total sense. Sounds good. We'll see you in Chicago.
Hey, buddy. And by the way, I'm thinking, I'm going to call you soon, but I've got my eyes kind of focused on a Yaesu 991A.
Okay, great radio.
And an Astron 35 power supply.
Okay, 35 amps will do it.
But I'm having some issues trying to pick out a couple antennas that make sense, but I'm going to call you on that one offline, all right?
Okay, we'll do it.
All right, man, thanks.
All right, take care.
This is so cool. Becoming friends and sharing hobbies with Eric Bischoff. Where else is this happening? All right, guys, I'm going to issue a challenge for the next handful of you. You guys have been around for a while. When I say your names, you'll know who you are. You guys are going to be doing rapid fire with Eric Bischoff, okay? So that's the challenge. And you guys are, in this order, RJ Krasinski, Mike Whitaker, and Brad Stanton. Ready, go.
Hey, Eric. Really digging this Strictly Business that you have with John Elba. What are the odds of getting you and Jeff Jarrett on an episode to kind of like piggyback off of everything between WCW and TNA?
Oh, I think the odds are pretty good. I like working with Jeff. We've got a good chemistry. We've done a show together. I can't remember what the subject matter was, but we've actually done one together and it worked out pretty well. So I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. You know, Jeff's really got some things going on. I've got a couple of things I'm kind of immersed in and we're all busy, but it'll happen, brother. It'll happen. It's a good idea. I would say sometime before the end of this year for sure.
Awesome. Looking forward to seeing you in Chicago as well.
All right, brother. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Trust me.
Awesome.
All right. Boom, boom. Mike Whitaker, rapid fire, babe.
I'm here. So Eric, sorry, I was a little late. So sorry if this question has already been asked, but what do you think about WWE unifying the titles? The WWE title, the tag team titles, everything else?
What are they going to do with the brand split? I'm not following WWE closely enough to have any idea what's going on there. I have heard about unifying the titles, but is there any discussion about still having this brand warfare or the perception of it going on? Or they just go back to, you know, anybody can wrestle anywhere. What's that?
Yeah, that we don't know. But I was just asking, like, your opinion, you know, being if you were in charge right now, what would you do? Would you have?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It so much depends on the creative strategy for SmackDown and Raw. And this is what we don't know. Are the networks cool with just having talent crossing back and forth between the shows? If they are, then I think that, you know, just one title makes a lot of sense. I think it could really work by creating more focus and presumably at least creating more stakes, right? If there's only one of something, it's more important than if there's two of them, I guess. So I don't know. Until we know the rest of the plan for Raw and SmackDown and the talent associated with it, I don't know how to answer that.
What would you rather? Would you rather a title on each side, or would you rather one title? And that competitor, whoever it is, Roman Reigns, Usos, whoever has it, go back and forth. What would you rather? Would you rather have two titles?
I think I'd rather have two and have the opportunity to have two champions, you know, going head to head eventually at one point. But that's just because I've gotten used to it now. I think in the past I used to have a hard time with it a little bit. I mean, I understood it, but it's just like it didn't feel as exciting to me as it did when there was one champion and that one champion was dominant over everybody. So part of me still likes that. The more traditional side of me still likes that. But the business side of me sees it the other way a little too easily. So I don't know. Tough one, though. But I don't have to make that decision.
God. All right. Thank you, man.
Thank you, buddy.
I'll see you in Chicago.
All right, pal. Look forward to it.
All right, Mike, we're going to jump in with Brad Stan in just a minute because this was supposed to be rapid fire. But Eric, you said something that caught my attention. You said it's always better to have one than of two. And I would just like to argue that that's probably true with titles, but in many cases, two is better than one when we're talking about things that are good, right? You always just want great things come in pairs. This is
you are horrible.
I am. Horrible. I am. All right, Brad. Jump on in. What's up, Brad Stanton?
Hey, thanks for getting me in. I appreciate you squeezing me in.
Glad to have you. Oh, he's muted.
Oh, he muted himself. You got him so flustered.
Sorry about that. So, Eric, I was talking to a fellow top guy, James Alcarai, yesterday. So I've been in the car business for 20 years. And I said, I always ask leading questions. And what I mean by that is, you know, that I'm looking for an answer that I already know. And that has somehow made it through these Zooms because you just can't turn that off. But you are the one guy that doesn't fall for any of my bullshit. So that is.
You know why that is? You know why that is?
Why is that?
You should never bullshit a bullshitter who's been bullshitting longer than you.
Well, thank you for keeping me straight. And I'm really looking forward to meeting you finally in Chicago.
I look forward to it, my friend.
Thank you.
Keep selling those cars. And which color do you prefer? Do you like that in red, or do you like it in blue?
Whatever you like, sir.
Gee, Eric, whatever you like. I bet you like green, right? Okay. Joe M., what do you have for Eric Bischoff?
Oh, I think I got a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can.
Okay. I've had problems in the recent ones, and I just want to make sure. So thanks, Lauren, and how you doing, Eric? Good to see you.
I'm doing well, Joe.
So my question has to do with your last year with WCW. What was exactly your role in WCW when you came back in 2000? I know you were there and up in, at least on screen up until the whole Hogan Bash at the Beach Russo ordeal.
Yeah, I was to try to keep this rapid fire. I was my contractually, I was considered a independent contractor / consultant. Okay. I wasn't an employee. And I did provide on-camera services as a part of that agreement. That was it in a nutshell. I was a consultant.
Gotcha. And then when did your time actually just working with WCW? When was that?
Well, technically it would have been in July of 2020, but contractually they still owed me quite a bit of money. So I got paid for a long time, even though I wasn't working there.
Gotcha. Okay. I was just curious about that ending there. So, but thanks for letting me ask this last question, I guess.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yep.
You're not quite last. We have saved Eddie Prather for last. It's good to see you, Eddie.
What's up, Lauren? What's up? What's up, Eric? What's up, brother?
How are you, man?
Okay. I do have a real tough question for you, and you might chew my ass out for this.
Ooh.
If you were have to go on a road trip and had to pick one of these four people, who would it be? Russo, Alvarez, Meltzer, or Cornette?
Well, now to be clear, are we asking who's going shotgun on the road trip or who's getting run over on the road trip?
Going shotgun. Oh, or okay. Yes, to go a whole
gotcha.
Ride with them.
That's not even a tough one. That would be Jim Cornette all day because I think he's funny as hell.
And I think you at least have somewhat respect for Cornette. You were able to sit with him on the WWE special that you guys did, Table for Three.
Yeah, no, listen, Cornette has his style and he has his opinion. Some of them I agree with, some of them I don't. A lot of them, though, I actually do agree with. If you get past the way he says certain things and the kind of and this sounds weird coming from me, but the aggression in it all. But if you just listen to what he says, I probably agree with him more than I disagree with him. So, and I think he's funny as hell.
So like I
would, I would just fuck with him the whole time. I would try to piss him off. Just little things, not like big things, but I would just do little shit. Like if I found out, for example, that he hated when people ate popcorn on the carpet because the popcorn gets all over the carpet, I'd just get a big fucking tub of popcorn. I'd be digging in that thing and I'd have popcorn flying all over just to see how long it would take to make him snap.
That's something I would probably do too. I like to
fuck great minds think alike, like brother. That. Thanks for the question. I appreciate it.
Thank you for answering my question. And I hope you bring Mrs. B with you to Chicago. She's a great person.
I'll be there. Don't you worry. I will be there. I'm kidding. We all love Mrs. B. Thank you guys, everyone, for joining us. Hey, if you're listening to this later, I want you guys to know that you've missed all the fun over here in the chat box. You guys don't even know what you're missing. If you're not here, you're really missing out. But if you're listening to us later down the road, be sure to get your upgrade on. Join us for Top Guy Weekend. It's going to be a blast, I promise. Eric, always good to see you. Be following Eric on at eBischoff, of course, and at 83 Weeks. Does Strictly Business have a podcast Twitter handle?
Not yet. We're going to get to work on that.
All right. Be looking for that then. Eric, any final words for our friends tonight?
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Eric.